Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 10th, 2009. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, joins us to talk about some partial mash recipes that are a little out of the ordinary. Extract brewers can take a step off the beaten path by stepping up into partial mashing. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And you can follow me on Twitter, my username, basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook, And if you become a fan of the show there, I'll be sending out occasional notices when shows are posted and such. I've only read that about 1,000 times. Well, maybe not 1,000. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support. And we also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site, too. All go to help us bring you good stuff. My contribution to the BYO-BBR collaborative experiment on yeast pitching rates is in the bottle. I bottled this past Friday, and I'm looking forward to tasting it in a few weeks. The deadline for submitting your data, if you're participating in the experiment, is September 30th. And yes, I finally put up the online form for you to report your data. You can find it at basicbrewing.com/experiment. You can also find a link to Chris's blog entry with the details on participating and a PDF with the information and a worksheet that you can use to collect your notes on the process. Very exciting stuff. Once again, basicbrewing.com/experiment or at the top of the page at basicbrewingradio.com. This is going to be a short intro into the interview this week because I'm getting ready to head out to the northwest part of the country with my buddy Andy Sparks, owner of thehomebrewery.com and the man responsible for my getting into home brewing. Andy and I are heading up to attend Hop Madness, which is a gathering at Willamette Mission State Park, not too far from Portland. You can find out more at hopmadness.com. I've heard from a few of you who say that you're going to be up there too. I'm looking forward to seeing you. That's where we'll be seeing the hop harvesting process, and we'll be hanging out with home brewers who are camping and brewing in the park. Can't wait for that. That happens on Saturday. But before then, Andy and I are going to fly in on Thursday afternoon. I'm recording this a day early, as usual. So we'll be flying in Thursday evening and doing some fun stuff at that time. And then we've got other, we're lining up at least one brewery tour for your video and audio listening pleasures. Who knows what we'll do or who we'll run into up there. So stay tuned for that next week. So anyway, wish us luck. We hope to see you there. And you can check our Twitter accounts. Andy is Brew Lager Beard on Twitter if you want to follow him as well. Okay. A while back, we talked to Chris Colby about his technique of using a 2-gallon cooler to do partial mashes on the countertop. Well, he's back to talk about using that method to make some beers that are a bit unusual. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me on, James.
We're going to talk about partial mashing, but before we go into that, let's bring everybody up to speed on where we are on our Brew Your Own magazine, Basic Brewing Radio collaborative experiment. It is underway, is it not?
It's on. Yep.
Like a gang fight. It's on.
Yeah, it's on.
But it's like one of those gang fights in West Side Story. It's more about dancing than fighting, actually, right? if you're going to draw a parallel.
With the bubbling fermentation locks and all that, yeah.
So we're testing, as I probably will have said in the introduction to this interview, we're testing how yeast pitching rates affect beer fermentation, homebrew fermentation. And you had a little bit of a false start on yours.
Yeah, I've been a homebrewer for a while. I know what you can and can't get away with, but every once in a while I sort of persist in trying to get away with something. I was going to brew this batch the day that it was on my wife's birthday. She was, she was still going into work, but we were going to go head out and have some beers with our homebrew club later. And I didn't get started exactly as early as I wanted to because, the video game Civilization IV is very entertaining. And so anyway, I got started a little bit later than I wanted. And, my idea was that I was going to brew the beer while she was away, cool it down, so it was nice and cool, and then just let it settle while we were out having a couple beers. Then I'd come back in the evening, and rack it to Carboys. Of course, that didn't work out exactly how it for one thing, when it gets up to nearly 100 every day, and down for recently from being over 100 every day, our tap water is like at 75 or 80 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I was having difficulties getting the temperature down. And by the time my wife was like, let's go, the wort really wasn't that cool by any, it wasn't burning hot anymore, but it was warmer than it should be. And then, we stayed out later than we expected. And, when I got back, I just wasn't in the mood for, 2 hours of racking and all that. Because with, five carboys and weighing out all the yeast and all that, it's a little more of a production than just racking it into one carboy. So I said, I'll just wake up early and do it the next morning. So I did it, and I saved my wort. I saved a little bit of wort on the side just as a wort stability test. And, sure enough, as I would have predicted, although I was hoping against, the wort started spontaneously fermenting the next day, and the carboys of, actual pitched beer just smelled awful. So I had to take the next weekend and brew again.
So your experiment with no-chill brewing didn't work out so well.
Yeah, my experiment with no-chill brewing is a thumbs down. Granted, I didn't have they have some way of sealing the wort up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had the lid on the brew pot. And there was some other stuff over the lid to try to keep stuff out, but.
Oh,
yeah,
well.
Was it? Yeah.
So I
relearned that lesson every, every couple of years.
So you have done a restart, and you're going beyond our basic instructions, which is pitch the recommended amount of yeast and then pitch under and then pitch over. You've mm-hmm. got five different batches going.
Right. I got 5 3-gallon carboys. There's 2 gallons of wort in each, and I pitched 1, 2, 4, 8, and 16 grams of yeast, respectively. The middle one of those, the 4 grams, is pretty much right on line with the recommended pitching rate. And the one above and below that are half as much and twice as much. And the 2 on the ends are a quarter as much yeast and 4 times as much yeast.
Wow.
So I've got the spectrum pretty much covered.
And my little barley wine, I'm calling it a barley wine. It started at 1079, so I guess you could call it a barley wine. It is in the bottle, so I'm just waiting for that to bottle condition, and then we can taste that. I did the recommended rate was these are 2 gallon batches. I split 1 6-gallon batch into 3, and the recommended pitching rate was 6 grams of dry yeast. So I used 6 grams, and then my gram scale or my scale only measured in whole grams. So I went with 2 grams, which is a third, and 24 grams, which is 4 times the recommended pitching rate. So I told everybody on the previous podcast that I knew what the finishing gravity was, but I'm not going to tell. I don't want to influence anybody out there who's in the middle of doing the experiment. And I have heard from people who are doing the experiment, including Mark Smith up in Benton County, Arkansas. You've heard on the show, he's doing a Pilsner.
Good.
So it'd be interesting to do a lager. So anyway, we've got that on tap. I hope everybody is taking part of that, or several people are taking part in that. You can find out all the details on Chris's blog at byo.com/blogs. And you can see the online experiment form, as well as download a detailed procedure PDF along with a worksheet at basicbrewing.com/experiment. And there's a link to that also on the Basic Brewing Radio page. So there you go. Exciting stuff. I can't wait. But on to the meat of the discussion. We had talked in the past about your countertop partial mashing technique, where you use a 2-gallon cooler to work with partial mashing, which is very cool. And when I first heard that you were doing an article on partial mashing, I thought, well, we've done that before. But then I looked, and you've got some really interesting recipes to use with the technique. So I thought, well, it'd be fun to revisit the topic and then explore how you can use this technique to really do some interesting stuff. So first of all, walk us through. We have to remember that we've got newbies listening, so we have to kind of quickly start from the ground level and bring them up to speed before we move on. So what is partial mashing to begin with?
Partial mashing is just a way to make a beer where you it's sort of a hybrid between all grain brewing and brewing with extracts, malt extracts. What you do is you mash a small amount of grain, and the amount, you know, varies depending on what there's many different methods of making a partial mash, but you mash some of the grain and you make some of your wort that way, and then you boil it, add hops like as usual, but you use malt extract then to bring the your expected gravity, specific gravity, up to the actual, you know, your target value. For example, in countertop partial mashing, you know, usually somewhere, for most average strengths of beers, usually somewhere between a third and a half of the extract weight of the beer, you know, the total amount of stuff that contributes to a specific gravity. About half of that comes from the mash, and then the remaining, you know, half to two-thirds, it comes from malt extract.
So it is a way that you can kind of, number one, ease your way into all-grain brewing, and then also a way to add some complexity to just plain extract brewing that you couldn't just by using extracts.
Right. If you're an extract brewer, partial mash brewing does several things. As you mentioned, it kind of demystifies the idea of mashing in all-grain brewing. A lot of times the instructions for all-grain brewing, sort of because there is a scientific component, some people can't seem to stop themselves from talking about enzymes and you know, making it seem really complicated. But in reality, all grain brewing boils down to you take crushed malt and you steep it in hot water. So it's and doing a partial mash is a great way to just do it at a small scale. You don't feel like, you know, if you mess it up, well, you know, it's just on a small scale and it's not it's not a big deal. So one thing partial mashing does is, yeah, for extract brewers, takes the mystery out of all grain brewing and gives them, you know, maybe if they're interested in it, the reason to proceed that way. It also gives extract brewers the ability to use a lot of different malts that they normally wouldn't be able to, because they need to be mashed, and, you know, usually mashed in some sort of quantity. You know, like you can mash or you can sort of steep small amounts of Vienna or Munich in your beer, but really to get any character from them, you would need a decent amount, and for that you really need to step up to a partial mash. And you know, there are other specialty malts like Rauch malts, which is the German smoked malt, and Just also different base malts that, you can get, pale malt extract or light malt extract, and it gives you, a extract made from, some kind of light malt. But if you want to control what kind of light malt you're using, you can experiment, with using, say, British floor malted Maris Otter. You can use the Scottish Golden Promise. You can use, specifically a German Pilsner malt. You can use specifically an American domestic two-row or six-row. Or, it gives you the freedom to use, incorporate basically any different base malt into your brewing that you can't to any great degree with just plain extract brewing.
And these are, these base malts have starches that need to be converted by a mash. You can't just steep them in the water as you're, bringing the water up to temperature as you would just a specialty grain like Crystal or chocolate malt or something like that, as you normally would with an extract with grains recipe. So if you wanted to experiment with these sort of more exotic base malts, you can't just steep it in a grain bag. You do have to go through the mashing process. And your method of using the cooler is a really cool way of doing it in a fairly easy way. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, the way I formulated, or the basic idea behind the countertop partial mash was there's a lot of different methods, and most of them, involve you've got all your grains, you've got them in a big grain bag, and some methods you heat it all on your stove and then you lift out the grain bag and put it in a colander and sort of rinse it, and that's that works, but it's kind of splashy, I've done it a few times that way, and you end up splashing quite a bit if you're not really careful. There's also oven mashing where you put it in the grain bag and you put it in a pot and stick it in the oven, on low as possible with the door open. And I don't know, living in Texas, having the oven on and the door open isn't always something that I look forward to. if I want just raging hot temperatures, I'll go outside. And also then, you got to reach in and the pot's hot, and not that pot holders are unavailable technology, but it gives you're reaching into the oven and having to move that, and then you still have to pull the grain bag out and do all that, and it's not undoable. Plenty of people do it, but the keeping the grain bag contained in the cooler and just pouring hot water on top and then running off wort through the spigot is just a nice clean way of doing it. It makes very little mess, and it's a lot more similar to all grain brewing in that you don't, once the mash has been started, it the grain bed basically stays there. You don't ever, yank the whole grain bed and move it to another container. So that's pretty cool. And also just one quick comment on steeping. The difference between steeping and mashing is they're both, soaking crushed grains in water. Mm-hmm. That, the big differences are temperature. In mashing, your temperature has to be in, within the range. It's usually 148 to 162. And in practice, it's usually a lot narrower than that. But it has to be somewhere in that range. And also the mash volume has to be within a certain range. You could steep, grains and have them mash if your temperature and mash volume were right. Mm. But most people, when they steep grains, they've got, 2.5 or 3 gallons of water in their brew pot, and they're steeping like a pound of, grains in it. And that's really, you're not going to fully mash the grains at that point. You'll get, if you're at the right temperature, you'll get some conversion because, they'll be, starch will let out into the wort, and the enzymes will run into some of it, but it's just too dilute. And the nice thing about partial mashing is, not only do you make sure that you convert all the starch that you have in there, you use it at a higher rate per 5 gallons than you would with steeping.
Mm. Now, you've got, let's see, one, two, three recipes?
Three recipes, isn't it?
Yeah. We've got a sweet potato ESB, a barbecue brow, and a compromise Bock. And these are recipes that, with just a partial mash, you can experiment with some interesting techniques. Let's start out with a sweet potato ESB. This is a beer that you couldn't do with just an extract batch, right?
Right. In this partial mash sort of roundup, this recipe collection, I wanted to focus on beers where you use the technique of mashing in an unusual way and adapt that for partial mashing. And the first one is just an adaptation of my sweet potato beer that I've brewed a number of times. And it's basically just a strong English ale. I call it an ESB. It's got base malt, British pale malt, some crystal malt, and then there's some sweet potatoes thrown in. You boil the sweet potatoes, cube them up and make them into sort of mashed potatoes, and then stir that into your mash. And all this does really is the starches from the potatoes get used, just like, the starches if it had been barley, and it gives, adds some extract weight to the beer, and it also adds an interesting kind of color, especially in combination with the darker crystal. There's no sweet potato flavor to the beer. You could try roasting the sweet potatoes if that's what you were looking for. Like if you're trying to make a Thanksgiving beer and you really wanted like a sweet potato flavor to it. But in the recipe as it is in there is just the sweet potatoes just add extract weight and a little bit of color. And it basically, it ends up tasting like a pale ale, but it has an interesting color. And there's an interesting story to go with it. If you give it to your friends, you may use sweet potatoes in making it.
So the enzymes that are in the base malt at mashing temperature work to convert the starches in the potato into sugars.
Right. The starch in sweet potatoes has a gelation temperature that's lower than the mash. So, and also you boil them before, so even if it didn't, it's fine. But, you boil the potatoes, work them into the mash, and the starches from the potatoes will, diffuse throughout the mash. And then, you're right, the enzymes from the malted grains will just go take care of the starches, degrade them into maltose and maltotriose and larger chain, quote-unquote, dextrins, just like they would starch from barley.
Now, do you have to worry about a stuck sparge at all or a stuck mash? I mean, you don't mention anything about using rice hulls or anything like that. Is there just the ratio of sweet potato to grain such that you don't have to worry about that?
Right. This is in the partial mash recipe, I use sweet potatoes at a rate that's actually lower than the rate that I used it on my all-grain brews that I've done of it. Hmm. So there's no... and I found that if you take the sparge, at a nice reasonable rate, you don't even have to slow it down, really. But just at a reasonable rate, you should have no problem, absolutely, at that range. I found with regular potatoes that there's definitely a threshold over which your mash goes from a mash with potatoes in it to like a cement block that's just impenetrable.
And the cooking of the potatoes is a necessary step. You couldn't just cube up raw potatoes and put them in there?
If you just cubed them and put them in there, you would... the cubes would be thick enough, and they wouldn't have enough time, really, for all the starches to get out.
Mm.
The temperature of the mash should be enough to... the temperature's over the gelation temperature for the starches, but, you pretty much need to boil them to get the starches just readily available so that you can stir that the sweet potato mush essentially into the into the mash.
So I have a question. You've got two kinds of base malt, a British pale malt, a two-row, mm-hmm. And then you have crystal malt, sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
Then you have Muntin's light dried malt extract, and then Muntin's light liquid malt extract. Why would you have to use both the dry and the liquid, or could you just go with one or the other?
You could use either form. In BYO recipes, we just sort of as a as an arbitrary thing that we do is we call for liquid malt extract for late additions. You know, when you when you're making an extract beer or a partial mash beer and you're adding extract late in the boil, we always specify those are liquid additions. One reason for that is that when you know something's boiling really hard and you pour dried malt extract into it, it can really foam up. Not that that's you can get around that by just sort of not pouring the whole load of malt extract in at one time, but we just for convenience we put liquid malt extract for the early ones and stuff you add. Dry malt extract that you add before the boil starts, we usually just go with dried for that. But malt extract if it's fresh and in good quality, either form will work.
Good to know. And you can also you don't have to add it all at once. You can kind of dribble it in a little at the time and not have to knock the boil down. As they were talking in the troubleshooting panel that I moderated out at Oakland. I think that was one suggestion that maybe Tommy Arthur and Vinny Chalurzo were talking about. Instead of just whack, adding all your fermentables, boom, at once and knocking your boil down and having to come back up. You can just kind of dribble over time and keep your boil going at the same time. The next recipe is barbecue brow with the little umlauts and things and in the German tradition, I guess, of barbecued beers.
In the German meat spinal tap tradition, yeah. Just random umlauts.
Tell us about that one.
This is just a beer that I've brewed, as an all-grain beer many, many times. It was originally inspired by Schlenkerle Rauch beer, which is a classic Rauch beer. It's essentially like you might want to think of a Vienna Lager or Oktoberfest that's smoked beer. Their main product from or most famous product from Schlenkerle is a smoked Märzen. And I started brewing smoked beers before I had the ability to lager properly. And so I used to just make it sort of as a German alt instead. Use smoke malt, just use a nice neutral ale yeast, low hopping rate, no late hops. And, it just makes a nice smoky beer that's great on its own, but really just goes spectacularly well with barbecue.
And this is another one. You would be hard pressed to find a smoked malt extract. probably not any out there. So if you wanted to do an extract beer and you wanted to have a smoked beer, doing a partial mash is one way to do it. I don't know if it's the only way. I was going to say the only way to do it, but surely somebody out there has done it in another way.
Yeah, I think Weyermann may make a smoked malt extract, at least as a seasonal. I've never seen it in the States at a homebrew shop, but I don't have a kaleidoscopic knowledge of what every homebrew shop stocks. But yeah, as an extract brewer, you'd be sort of hard pressed to make a smoked beer like this because in the absence of finding smoked malt extract, you couldn't really steep enough of the smoked malt to get a good, good amount of that smoky flavor in there. You would, unless you're hauling, 4 or 5 pounds of, grain in your steeping bag, which is a lot more than most people would ever attempt. You just wouldn't get that. So this recipe it has, 4 pounds of the of the Rauch malts, which is a smoked malt. It's, you know, it's a little darker than a Pilsner malt. Yeah, at that rate, you'll get a nice amount of smokiness in the beer. It'll be, it won't be over the top. Like some smoked beers are just, you know, incredibly strong smokiness, and others are subtle, almost to the point that you don't taste the smoke. At 4 pounds per 5 gallons, you'll definitely taste it, but it won't be overwhelming. Hmm. And, you know, other approaches that an extract brewer could use to make a smoked beer would be used peat smoked malt, which you can use in very small quantities. But that has a more sort of it's a harsher, more acrid kind of smokiness. I mean, it's certainly at the right levels. It can be very nice in certain styles of beer. But in a beer where there's going to be a pronounced smokiness, I think the Rauch malts does a lot.
Well, there's we actually have four recipes. We've got the Bastropper Weiss, a sour mash beer hiding in there. And we've talked about sour mash beers before as well. So you can also do that. You don't have to do a full grain batch to do a sour mash beer.
Yeah, that's another nice thing about partial mashing is that, like, as an extract brewer, you can't really. You know, there's no way to do a sour mash because, you know, obviously you need a mash. And the Bastropper Weiss is just an easy way to do a quick sour mash. You can run it, the sour mash, 1 or 2 days. Then you just run off, and using the cooler you can do this, you just run off basically all but the top layer of wort, because if from the grain bed, because if you do have any contamination that's going to cause flavor problems, it's most likely floating right on top where it has access to air, like specifically, you know, vinegary flavored off things are going to come from Acetobacter, which isn't going to be living down in the middle of a mash, you know, of a sour mash. It'll be living on top. So you strain off like most of the mash from most of the wort from the grain bed, and it's sour. And then you boil it and you proceed to make a beer like you normally would. But it turns out, you know, nice and sour. And because you're not, in this beer, you're not souring it by, adding bacteria to your fermenter. It's not something that's going to take forever to develop. It's also not something that then you have to freak out that your equipment, you used it for a sour beer because, you boiled the wort prior to that. And it, you know, it develops in the amount of time that a normal ale would be. You know, I mean, it doesn't, it's modeled after a Berliner Weiss, but it doesn't get as dry and as puckeringly sour as a Berliner Weiss. It's less sour and it's got a nice little sweet sour balance to it. But it's very doable, very interesting, and the only really trick you need to know is when you're done and you've got, you know, four pounds worth of sour malt in your cooler, is just fill the cooler with hot water and put like a teaspoon of baking soda in it and let it sit overnight, and that'll take all the odd smells and the sourness out of it.
Oh, cool. So run quickly how you would use your countertop partial mash container to make a sour mash.
Well, first of all, you just start off with a plain mash. You take about, you know, roughly 3/4 of the grains that you would mash them in at you know, well, pretty much whatever mash temperature you want. I think I picked in the low 150s. Let that mash so that the starches get degraded into sugar. Then while that's going, take the remaining amount of your malt and sort of stir that into room temperature water. And then when the mash is done, stir that, the room temperature mix into the sour mash to bring it down to right about 120. That's sort of the upper level of where the souring organisms will live, but it's higher than a lot of the other stuff will live comfortably at. So you sort of select for the you know, sour bugs, and there'll be bacteria just living on the grain you know, from when they're growing out in the field, there's, you know, those bacteria live on the grain, and then when they're malted, you know, then they sit and steep in water, and the temperatures like that, they're you know, they get deposited on the malted barley, so they're there. And also in the recipe, I call for adding, you know, add a tube of Y yeast or White Labs bacteria, just to, you know, to make sure that you get enough in there to get the souring to go quickly and nicely. And basically the one trick with that is I like to, if I'm going to use bacteria in a sour mash, is make sure to acclimate your bacteria. I'll just either just stick the White Labs tube, just push it down into the mash so it's just sitting on top, you know, or just lay the white yeast bag on top of the mash for like, you know, 20 minutes or whatever until it heats up, and then, you know, open them up and pour them in and stir in the bacteria. Because if you just, you know, if you pull the bacteria out of the fridge and it's at 40 degrees and then you dump it into 120 degree mash right away, you know, you've just pretty much wasted buying those bacteria, because there's not going to be a high survival rate for that.
And then how long does it take to sour nicely?
You know, 1 to 2 days is really all you need. And also, the longer you go, the more problems you're going to get with the potential for off flavors to develop. So, you know, if you do this beer as a summer beer, which is good, and you can set your cooler outside somewhere where it's warm and keep it relatively insulated, a day is probably really enough to get, you know, a decent amount of sourness so that your beer is sort of recognizably sour, you know, so when you taste it, it doesn't seem like, you know, has this beer gone bad? You know, you'll know definitely that it was meant to be sour, not just...
Nasty.
not just a pale ale that wasn't brewed well. Yeah. And, you know, if you like a little bit extra more sour crunch, let it go for 2 days. And, you know, beyond that, if you want to push your luck and try it for longer, you know, especially if you can keep the temperature up, give it a try. But I really think most of the time, just being able to keep, you know, the temperature in most cases is going to drop significantly because you've got a smaller cooler. And even if you keep it outside, you know, it's going to get somewhat cooler at night or whatever, and you're not going to be able to control the temperature quite as well as you would like. And so, you know, a day or 2 days should do it in most cases. And with, you know, inoculated with lab-grown bacteria, you'll get a good, strong start, you know, as strong as bacteria are going to go. They're never going to take off like brewer's yeast is in a sugary solution, but they'll get a good head start on that work.
I was up in my attic a couple of weeks ago when it was, you know, near 100 degrees outside, and I know it was, I don't know, it had to be at least 10 degrees hotter up there, maybe 20, I don't know. I was thinking, hey, this would be a nice place to stick a mash while it's soured. I'll have to remember that next year.
That would be an excellent place for a sour mash.
The last recipe is the 1850 Compromise Bock. What's up with that?
This is just a recipe for an American-style Bock or a Texas-style Bock modeled on what I know of Shiner Bock. The name just comes from back in 1850. Texas was, or immediately prior to that, was a much larger region, and there was some compromise in the government, and it shrunk Texas to its current size. And that was called the 1850 Compromise. And likewise, you know, the technique we're using here, partial mashing, is a compromise between extract and all grain. And also, a lot of people view, you know, American style box or Texas style box as a compromise between, you know, quote unquote real box and American beers. So that was the overly long and boring genesis of the name of that beer.
But the technique that you bring in on this one is a cereal mash.
Right. Cereal mash is a very useful technique for any all-grain brewer to know, and certainly something that, as this recipe shows, any partial mash brewer can learn. And it basically allows you to use any starchy adjunct. And really what you do in this one, you use either corn grits or rice as the adjunct. And you just, you know, dilute those with water to, you know, fairly thick porridge-like consistency. You throw in, you know, basically a handful of crushed malt along with that. And you just slowly heat it and stir it to boiling. As an option, if you want, you can stop at, like, you know, somewhere between 158 and 162 for about 5 minutes, and just they'll let some of the starch from the grains will get degraded right then by the small amount of barley you've added, or small amount of malt you've added, and that just helps it be a little bit less viscous when you add it to the main malt. But basically, you heat up your cereal mash, you know, the adjunct and the small amount of grain, boil it for about 15 minutes, or, you know, the amount doesn't really matter once you get past, you know, 10 minutes or so, but 15 or 20 minutes, and then you have your main mash mashed in at a slightly lower temperature. And what you do then when you add the hot adjunct mash or the cereal mash to the main mash, stir it in, it comes up to, you know, the saccharification temperatures, you know, the temperatures where the enzymes quickly turn starch into the sugars you need. And that's basically it. And you can do it with, you know, it's used in corn and rice and American lagers all the time. But basically any starchy vegetable that you can find, or grain that you can find, you can do a cereal mash with and incorporate that, you know, that source of carbohydrates into your beer.
Now, what do they require a cereal mash? What's going on in there?
Well, they're not malted is the thing. I don't know if you could malt rice or corn. I don't know if there's some technical reason why you can't, or if it's just not feasible. But nobody malts corn or rice. So in order to have them work in the mash, you need to get have the starch in those adjuncts readily available for the enzymes in the malt to degrade. So the basic idea of boiling it is just you know, starch inside plants comes in little granules, and, you know, this is true in both the barley and in any plant that stores starch. It just comes in little granules, and heat eventually ruptures them, and, you know, and a sufficient amount of heat is also required to just make the starch, you know, from solid into sort of a gel. And so that's what the boiling stage does. It just ruptures the starch granules and makes them, you know, go from, you know, sort of a compact solid structure that the enzymes couldn't get at to one that's, you know, a gel that the enzymes can penetrate.
So something similar to what's going on with the sweet potatoes that we first talked about.
Very similar, yeah. The big difference there is that, actually, they are pretty much the same. The big difference is that there's no real difference.
One's a potato and one is corn.
Yeah, the starch gelation temperature of potatoes is a lot lower. But given that they're, you know, given that you boil those and the corn or rice in the other, you know, it really doesn't matter what that temperature is exactly, because you know, you're way over that temperature in the boil, and then you're still over that temperature, you know, by a good degree in the mashing of the potatoes, and I think you're still over it actually in a mash with corn and rice, but just not by as much of a margin.
And if you don't want to do a cereal mash and you want to use corn, you can use flaked corn or flaked maize, right?
Yeah, flaked maize has been it's maize that's been run through like a mill, so it's very, very thin and basically it will dissolve in the it's also the mill, I believe, is heated so that the starch crystals rupture, and that's ready to go. You can also just use, there are versions of corn syrup that are made specifically for brewers, called, cleverly enough, brewer's grade corn syrup. So if you want to use corn that way, that's also possible. There's also rice syrup, and there's also rice flakes. So yeah, there's a number of different ways that you can use it, but using it, you know, starting from actual rice or starting from corn grits is, you know, you're starting with a little more basic, unprocessed ingredient, and some people I know are just going to want to try, you know, a more, you know, a brew made from less processed ingredients rather than more processed ingredients.
Sure.
It's just fun to try, I think.
Yeah, more stuff to do. And that's why we're in the hobby, is we like to do stuff. and if it makes good beer, well, so much the better. Well, thanks, Chris. This is the I might try some of these recipes, especially the sour mash. I've been interested in trying that because I like sour beers, but you know, I don't like to wait, so I am lazy in that way. Or impatient, I guess. More impatient than lazy.
Making sour mashes is fun. It's and it's just something that, I don't know, you know, I think any brewer who, you know, has been brewing for a while should give one a try, you know, sometime, just because they're gonna likely have fun with it. And, you know, you always, anytime you're doing it with a sour mash, you're risking a few little off flavors. It's you know, it's not foolproof by any stretch of the imagination, but if you do it smart, you know, particularly if you add some supplemental bacteria, you know, and don't try to have the sour mash run completely off of just, you know, the bacteria on the grain, your probability of success goes way up.
Awesome. Well, all right, Chris, I appreciate your time again.
Well, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks again to Chris. You can find those four recipes in the upcoming issue of Brew Your Own magazine. If you want a free copy, you can click on the BYO banner ad on basicbrewing.com. If you choose to subscribe after reading that issue, you'll be helping to support this podcast, and we greatly appreciate your support. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Homebrewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find those at basicbrewingshop.com. We've got combo deals there to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can also see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. We also have shirts there and some hats, too, as well. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Magical Mushrooms, Mischievous Molds, and Zuzu Pets, Hamster, Pipsqueak, Yellow. I don't know what that means, but there it is. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. People buying some nice stuff this time. Digital cameras and stuff. Really nice. Don't forget that you can also join the American Home Brewers Association through an associate link on basicbrewing.com. And don't forget the BYO associate link as well. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio. And our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson down in Austin. Hope to see you in Portland. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. So long.